Hey Dreamers, this is your host Joe Pardo. It's been an extremely busy week for me, but I want to take a minute to thank everyone for all the great support for the show. Please keep all the reviews on iTunes coming. We've been very close to topping New and Noteworthy on iTunes for overall podcasts, as well as health, society and culture, and business. I also wanted to update everyone what's been going on with the website. If you go to howtodream.co/income, you can check out the Dreamers Podcast income reports as well as daily download stats. I want to make the podcast transparent so all of you can learn from my path. I also want to give shout outs to Ed and Nick for the wonderful messages that they sent me. I would love to hear from all of my listeners, and you can write me by going to howtodream.co/write. I wanted to let everybody know that I'm performing my DJ Mix Adventuratorium live with opening acts on August 2nd. It will be streaming online with video, and we will be raising money for Give Kids the World charity. A big thanks to all my listeners. You are truly inspiring to me. And I just want you all to know that there's some big news coming very soon. I hope you all have a great weekend.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I'm interviewing Chris Taylor, who is living his dream by being an entrepreneur living in a cave in Spain. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Joe, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking time out of your siesta time to be with us. Or is it not siesta time now?
It's siesta's come and gone, my friend. I'm back into full-on work mode for at least an hour and a half.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure.
Let's get started by giving some background about yourself.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm originally from Canada. I started the company that I run now called Actionable Books back in 2008. My wife and I made the decision in 2012 that we wanted to live in Spain. And so we basically started putting the pieces in motion. And in September of last year, made the move and rented out our house in Toronto, moved to very rural Spain. And we actually, as you mentioned in the opening, we actually moved originally into a cave in Spain, which is exactly how it sounds. It was a house built into the side of a mountain, far more open and airy than you might expect from a cave, but a cave nonetheless, and certainly makes for a great introduction. So since moving here, we've realized that we just really, truly love the travel lifestyle, and being able to sort of run the business from anywhere allows me the freedom to pursue that. And so we're here until the end of August, and then we're back in Canada for a couple months to basically, you know, close up some stuff and set some more permanent pieces in place. And then we're moving to Panama come November. And while we continue to jump around, I'm also as I mentioned, growing the company on a global stage. So it's an exciting time for us.
So why don't you go into a little bit about your book that's coming out?
Sure. Thanks for bringing it up. Yeah. So basically, in addition to the company, Actionable Books, I wrote a book called Beyond the Picket Fence. It's really a call to action for people to start living deliberate lives and to take control of the direction of where their life is headed. You know, I have nothing against the white picket fence in the suburbs with the 2.3 kids and the dog. In fact, I know many people, many of my family members included, who are extremely happy doing that and living that lifestyle. And that's fabulous. But I think it's a dangerous assumption to make that that's the best path for all of us. I think there's, you know, different people have different callings and different variations of what their ideal life looks like. And I also believe that we're now in a time that allows us to pursue those different versions of reality in an unprecedented way. And so, you know, we've got dozens of interviews in the book with people who are on the extreme end, you know, running their business. That's that sort of image, right? Of someone running a business from a laptop on the beach. And then we have much more subtle versions of people, you know, sort of taking sabbaticals and using that to work on projects of their own, whether it's writing a book or whether it's, you know, learning how to play guitar or woodwork. You know, it's a combination of that and basically just people living all sorts of different lifestyles that have made them happy, that have required conscious choice, that haven't been sort of the set path for themselves. So I'm really excited about the book. It's doing very well. We launched it through a pre-order campaign, sort of like a Kickstarter, but on a platform called Publishizer. and a really neat platform for a different book and doing well. So thanks for asking about it.
Not a problem. That'll definitely be in the show notes so people can go and pre-order the book there. It ends on July 21st, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's our last day.
So what does living the life that you're living mean to you?
One of the things that I'm really talking about in the book, and my wife and I do regularly, is sort of review what Roger Martin, an author based out of Toronto, calls the salient points. So the things that are truly important to you. And so making a list of those things and then pursuing a lifestyle that allows you to have those things. And so for us, you know, a couple of those things just right off the top are being close to water is important to us. Having a place that has Wi-Fi access is important. Having the ability to work hard and long hours on the projects that I want to be working on, and then being able to take off a Wednesday morning to go bike riding for, you know, 3 or 4 hours through the mountains of Spain. This sort of flexibility and balance is really important to me and to us. And so one thing that we have learned that was surprising to me was how little money factors into it. You know, we're here living for far less than we were spending when we were living downtown Toronto, and living a life that makes me happier, makes us both happier. And the money, you know, once your base needs are taken care of, when you're living a life that makes you happy, the money becomes non-consequential, which was really interesting to me, because as an entrepreneur, you know, I'm constantly focused on cash flow. And really the priority with cash flow is around make sure everyone can get paid, make sure that we can do the projects that excite us. That's pretty much it. There's not a huge motivation beyond that. And so it's really interesting to me to see that shift take place when you go from the rat race of the big city. And for some people, that is the big city. But when you're in a lifestyle that makes you genuinely happy and you feel as though you're pursuing the things that are important to you, how some of the monetary aspects just sort of melt away. That was a big insight.
So what would you say inspires you?
I get really inspired by people that are doing things that inspire them. So basically, you know, I love the idea of this podcast. I think, you know, connecting with people that are living lives that are exciting to them and doing things that matter to them, that always just sort of gets me going. I mean, I think people that are taking a step out into the unknown with a bit of a parachute or no parachute and just saying, you know, this is important enough to me to take the chance and I may fall down, but I'm going to do it anyway. That just really inspires me. And I have all the time in the world for people that are doing that, you know, regardless of where their skill level is, regardless of their success to date. I just think that the act of taking that brave leap is hugely inspiring. So I would say that inspires me. And people that are able to know very clearly what they want also inspires me. I have a lot of respect for people that can tell you very quickly whether it makes sense to collaborate on something or not. You know, they come in curious and interested in what you're up to and can balance that with a strong sense of their own priorities. And so, you know, they can be kind, but they can also be clear on what they want. And if it doesn't factor in what you're proposing or suggesting, then, you know, nicely, they can tell you it doesn't make sense. And I get inspired by that, because I think that, you know, people slide into one of two camps, you know, by default, and take proactive effort to get back. The two camps being one, you know, being a standoffish sort of person where no one can approach you, or being a pushover where anytime anyone asks you for anything, you do it. And I think that that middle line of being kind and being firm in your own beliefs is really inspiring. So it's a great question. Thanks for that.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate your compliments to the show. How did your dream of becoming an author and traveling all over the world come about?
It started small, I think. Like I would suggest for most people, when you're looking to do, you know, you have a grand vision for what your life would look like or could look like. Start small. I'd never left North America before I decided to fly off to Southeast Asia to propose to my now wife, who was teaching English in South Korea. And, you know, so for someone who's always dreamed about travel, that was a big step to leave. I'd done a lot of traveling in North America, but never actually left the continent. And so, you know, and that was only, what, 5 years ago. So, you know, started with a 2-week trip out there, realized that I loved it. I realized there was aspects of it that I didn't love. And so learning from that and balancing it out. And then continue to push. So with Spain, you know, as I was mentioning off camera, before we moved here permanently, we came out for 10 days and drove all over Spain to sort of identify what areas we liked and, you know, whether it actually lived up to our imagination, because we both had this strange desire to live in Spain, but neither of us had ever actually been here. So we figured it was probably wise to check it out first. And then same thing with the author, you know, I started writing a lot of summaries, 2-page, 1,000-word, 1,500-word business book summaries and articles and blog posts before I ever considered writing a book. I mean, I've probably written now, you know, the equivalent of 3,000 or 4,000 pages, but none of it's actually come together in a book before. And so that gave me confidence in my writing ability and people's interest in my writing and being able to build a following and traction around that. the act of writing a book has been the next step. And so starting small, see if anyone's interested in the book. And then, you know, we're getting traction on the Publishizer campaign, which is great. And now making sure that I'm finishing the book and continuing to deliver on expectations. You know, dream is to spend your life traveling the globe and run a multinational business, or whether it's to do something else more local or just totally different. I think a lot of people dream about things without fully understanding everything that's involved in that thing. And so my encouragement would be to try it first. Do the smallest unit you can to actually validate whether it's something that you are genuinely interested in before you, you know, sort of go in full bore. There's that, you know, the grass is always greener expression. And we see that where, you know, when I first moved to Spain, the number of people would be like, oh man, I wish I could move to Spain. And my response to a lot of them was that, you know, you really could if you wanted to. But, you know, there's enough things that are keeping you back home that you wouldn't want to give up. And that's totally cool. But appreciate what you have if you're staying, and appreciate what you're moving into if you're going. But I think it's a dangerous and unhappy place to be when you're not happy with what you've got. You're thinking about what else is out there, but you're not actually taking steps to move towards it. I think it's one of those things where it's, you know, if you really believe that that's going to make you happier, then go do it. And otherwise, really focus on what's good about what you've got, or find some happy medium, but don't, you know, sit in one camp and wish you were in the other.
I think that's really great advice for just about anybody. So I got to ask you, do you actually speak Spanish?
You know, Joe, it's been the funniest thing. No, I didn't speak a word before I got here. And I speak about four words more than that. Now, the challenge, and this is going to sound like such a cop-out to those who know, you know, five languages, but we got here and, you know, we've got the Michel Tomas, we've got the Rosetta Stone, we've got basically every learning tool you could have to learn Spanish. But the area of Spain that we're in, they don't speak Spanish, they speak Catalan. And so it's very difficult to go out and, you know, mingle with the locals when you're not actually speaking a language that, it's not even a different dialect, it's a totally different language. And so I don't really have a huge desire to learn Catalan because it's limited to this part of Spain and a tiny country called Andorra. But no, unfortunately, I have not learned enough Spanish. However, we are moving to Panama in November. And so I'm hoping that that environment will maybe give me more motivation and excuse to speak Spanish.
Yeah, I ran into that problem when we went to Barcelona. I thought that the little bit of Spanish I had background would be enough. The people that spoke Spanish that I was around didn't understand it either. So I was like, well, if they can't understand it, I'm probably not going to understand it either. And that was like an ATM machine.
It's amazing how much you can accomplish with sign language and a couple gestures, right?
Yeah. So how was your dream received by your family members?
It's a great question, Joe. I've been really fortunate. My parents, how would I put this? I've been deviating from the quote unquote standard path since I was a kid. I mean, I started my first business when I was 12 years old. I fast tracked through high school. And so I separated from the pack there. I worked in direct sales after university, which is every parent's dream, is to have their son selling knives right after during university, right? I've been prompting them to the fact that I was probably not going to live a traditional lifestyle. You know, it's funny. I remember when I first started actual books, I was doing a lot of consulting myself. And it was funny because every time I'd get a new client, you know, my mom's response was, oh, maybe they'll hire you. I'm like, no, they did hire me. She's like, no, but for real, like, as you know, for real. And she met as an employee, right? And you know, since, and it's years ago. So since that time, she's come to be really appreciative of the business. I think, you know, they miss us to an extent, being gone and away from the country. My family, I mean, on my side as opposed to my wife's side, I mean, they're scattered across Canada. So they're used to, you know, sort of infrequent visits anyway. I think it's harder though, if you're in a family where you are used to, you know, weekly get-togethers and phone calls every day, to be sort of jet setting around the globe is trying on people. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, they love you and they want to support you. And if it's something that makes you happy, but it's sort of the same thing as launching a business. You know, it's as soon as you start complaining about it or any of the downsides to it, people will glomp onto that and suggest that you return to the quote unquote normal path, right? Or the one that they're more comfortable with. So I think it's tough. I think it's, you know, I have friends that don't get it. I have friends that do get it and love it. And I think you start to appreciate the fact that, just like your high school friends. You know, some of them carry on forever, but most of them don't carry on past university. Some of your university friends carry on forever, but most of them don't carry on past, you know, having kids. I think it's the same thing with any major change in your life. When you go into a new state, you grow and they don't, or they grow in a different way. And so, you know, with family, you know, you're with them presumably for the rest of your life. With friends, you know, friendships change over time. And so I think it's probably the hardest part about making proactive change is that you are choosing to change and therefore, in a way, choosing to leave that comfortable world that they were and are a part of. And there can, you know, fortunately, it hasn't been the case for me, but I know of people where there's been resentment that's built up. And I think at the end of the day, it's tough, and I don't wish that on anyone, but you also need to live your life for yourself and, you know, your spouse and your, you know, sort of nuclear family if you have kids. But aside from that, I mean, you can't live your life for somebody else. You can be supportive of them. You can be there for them. And, you know, you can make an effort to connect with them in a way that makes sense for them, but you can't dedicate your whole life to somebody else. It's not a way that leads to happiness for you. And it provides a crutch for them, I think. And so I really think that, you know, you do yourself and them a favor by living a life that makes sense to you, communicating why it's important to you, and inviting them to participate in it as much as they want to.
Yeah, I think that's a great message, to not want to live your life for everybody else. You got to live it for yourself.
Yeah, and I don't mean that to sound selfish. I think that's, you know, that's one of the problems with that whole movement or message of, you know, like, do what you love, or, you know, live for the I focus or whatever. And it's not, I don't want to encourage it to be selfish or to be disrespectful or disregarding of the people in your life. I don't think that's part of it at all. I think it's a holistic look at, you know, if family's important to you, then you should make an effort to be connected to your family. But it's not the exclusive factor in your life, unless it is. But assuming that it's not the only factor in your life. And so it needs to be considered and taken into account, but it can't be the driving force for you if it's not the sole point of happiness for you. And so I think that's the whole point of the book, Beyond the Picket Fence, and of really what I sort of share when I speak and coach, is around that message, where let's look at the holistic values and influences in your life and really focus on prioritizing them in a way that applies the appropriate amount of energy to the appropriate influence based on, you know, what truly makes you happy.
So what steps did you take to get started when you decided you were going to move, and then when you decided that you were going to start your own business to put out your own books?
Yeah, great question. There's a lot in there.
I know. Well, you got a lot going on, man.
I do. You're right. I do. I think what I've gotten a lot better at, Joe, that I wasn't at the beginning, is that I was that guy who would jump in full bore. I mean, I launched my first business. When I launched this business, Actionable, I had literally about $700 in the bank. I had about $4,000 in sort of investment money that I could pull out. And that was it. You know, I had my car payments and rents and all that stuff. And I jumped out with no parachute, right? And I mean, I literally had like a month and a half of runway and no income to speak of. I don't recommend that. I think that's probably foolish. And, you know, it's a cause for a lot of stress for people. I think the whole idea of small bets, of whether it's the move, whether it's the business, whether it's writing a book. I mean, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but I come back to it. It's making those small bets. What's the smallest unit that you can test to actually see if this makes sense for you? And not just from a sense of, can you do it? Because I think you figure that stuff out. It's more a matter of, does it make me happy? Like, is this something that I actually want to do? Or is it something that sounds cool and maybe I don't want to do? You know, like, I think about living here in Spain. Like, I'm looking out the window right now. We're on 150 acres of mountain property with these olive trees, and it's absolutely stunning, is one way of looking at it. Or you could look at it and be like, man, the flies are really bad. It's really hot. Sometimes we don't have hot water. The power's on solar, and so you have to be careful with the energy that you're wasting or not. You don't have a hair dryer. There's no hair straighteners. You got to get propane to fill up for the stove. Like, you can focus on the things that really make you happy. Or if any of the things I just mentioned, you know, don't make you happy to a point where they'd make you miserable, then, you know, that's a good indication that this is not the lifestyle for you. And I don't think you know it until you do it. You can look at all the things that are really exciting about being an entrepreneur or living abroad or writing, being an author, right? And being a podcaster. I mean, all these things sound great if you look at the sort of sexy part of all of them. But the reality is that there is no perfection out there, right? I mean, there's perfect for you, but there's no real perfection. And so we need to people are pursuing a version of paradise or believe that, you know, that job or that city or that business would be perfect. And it's nonsense. I mean, it doesn't exist. And the sooner we get comfortable with that, and the sooner we go into a situation saying there will be downsides to this, but do the upsides outweigh the downsides? That's my criteria for whether this is something that I want to be doing or not. That's what we need to be focused on. And so I think, you know, coming back to your question, that first step is to get clear on what really matters to you. If living in Spain sounds great, but something that's really important to you is having hot water every day, then maybe rural Spain is not the right place for you, right? And so that's the part. I like cold showers, so I don't care. But for some people, it's a big deal, right? And so I think the very first step, get clear on what you want. And this is half the book is written around that idea of getting clear on what you want. Make a list of the salient factors, as Roger Martin calls it, that are most important to you in whatever context you're talking about, vacation, work, lifestyle, spouse, kids, you know, whatever, and make a list and share it with the people that are going to be impacted by these decisions. You know, is your spouse coming along for the ride? Do you have a spouse? Then you should probably include them in the conversation and share your list and ask them for their list and look at where the overlaps are, look at where the, you know, sort of distinctions are and celebrate the distinctions, encourage the distinctions and go forward sort of eyes open. You know, I realize I'm on a bit of a soapbox here, but it's just the most frustrating thing in the world to me when people look at someone else's life and with a broad stroke label it as, oh, that would be great, or, oh, that'd be terrible. And I mean, there's great and terrible aspects to everyone's life. And we need to embrace the things in our life that make it great or work and or work to actively replace some of the quote unquote terrible things with some great things proactively. I know I got totally off topic there, but I think the message universally speaking is start small, try it out, see how you feel about it, and then continue to leverage and grow that way.
No, I think you did a good job of explaining how your thought process of steps should go. And I think that's a great way to encompass everything that you've done.
Thanks, Joe.
Not a problem, Chris. So what were some of the roadblocks that you came across?
Roadblocks. I think, like a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm a bit of a starry-eyed optimist at times. And so when it was just me with the business, that wasn't a problem. You know, I could, you know, set a financial target, you know, miss it by 80%, eat ramen or Kraft dinner that month and, you know, get back on my feet. As I scaled the business and started to add people, we now have a team of 8, you know, I can't do that. I can't miss targets by 80% and expect people to stick around, right? Because I may be willing to live on peanuts a week to, you know, keep the business going, but they're not, nor should they be expected to, because they put their trust in the business to provide them with the paycheck that we agreed to. And so I think that was a big roadblock for me, was coming to terms with reality and realizing the assumptions that I was making were in fact assumptions. And I think it's so easy, you know, I talk a lot, as you can tell, and I like to share, you know, the ideas of where the business is growing. And the more I'd share an idea with friends and family and my wife and, you know, coworkers and clients and whatever, you start to blur the line between the assumptions that you've made in that picture of what could be and the path to getting there, right? You start to overlook some of those assumptions and start to say, well, that's, you know, there's nothing could possibly derail us from doing this. And that's extremely dangerous. So I think big roadblocks for me have been that, has been making assumptions and not appreciating that I'm making assumptions and learning how to come to terms with that. I think I've got a lot better at it in the last couple of years, but I still miss the mark on things. I mean, we had last fall, I mean, I had projections and clients lined up I thought were done deal. And then it was a perfect storm of, you know, for whatever reason, you know, things falling apart, various economies, various budgets getting cut, whatever. And, you know, we missed our mark massively and it put a serious strain on the business through the spring. Like I'm really fortunate that I have an incredible group of people working with me at Actionable who were able to sort of rally and get things back on track. But with a weaker team or a little less resolve, I mean, we could have gone under 5 years into the business. And thankfully we've bounced back from that in a big way, but it's really dangerous to do that as an entrepreneur.
So what's one of the ways that you keep yourself on the ground?
Great question. I do a couple things. I have an incredible partner in my wife. And so I get to talk things through with her and she sees the world in a very complimentary but different way. And so being able to collect her insight and hear her take on things helps to ground me and put me sort of back in context of, you know, bigger picture stuff. I've also taken up cycling. I found that riding my bike makes a massive difference to my psyche throughout the week. I go for a 3 or 4 hour bike ride every Wednesday morning and I love it. And I look forward to it each week. I listen to, you know, audio books or just music and just sort of hit the trails, and it's an amazing thing. And then I think it's, you know, it's those little, I forget who called them, micro vacations or mini vacations, where, you know, that 3 hour bike ride is a mini vacation to me. Going to the beach on Saturday morning, where we literally go for like 2 hours, is a mini vacation to me. It's a chance to, you know, sort of step back and appreciate life. And I get two mini vacations a week, which is pretty fabulous. So that keeps me grounded. And then there's a book called The Rockefeller Habits by a gentleman named Vern Harnish that does a really great job of laying out a meeting schedule of all things that I've sort of appropriated and turned into my own. We use it with the team as well, but I also do my own version of it with effectively what it is regular reflection points. So on a daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual basis, for obviously different lengths of time and with different levels of depth, really reflecting on what the last unit of time has looked like, what was accomplished, how my energy levels were, you know, am I happy doing what we're doing? What do I feel? It's a lot of gut check stuff, combined with the hard numbers of the business and, you know, sort of spreadsheet analysis and that sort of thing. So a really interesting combination. But I do find that those review sessions make such a difference for me, being able to look back at the end of the month. And I take basically a day a month where I will look back six, seven hours, where I'll look back on the month as to what the assumptions were going into that month and how we mapped those assumptions, what the learning was from, you know, sort of misalignment or even when we hit it sort of spot on. I look forward to the month ahead and identify the things I'm most excited about and how they line up with the long-term vision for the company and for my life. And I think that's an important part, is that, you know, people might assume that I'm talking about this in context of the business, which is true, but there's also a big chunk of it in looking at it in context of my life. And, you know, that's a conversation that Amy, my wife, and I have regularly, you know, once a quarter, once every couple months. Is 2 months ago, we loved Spain. Do we still love Spain? You know, is this still the lifestyle that we want? Because things change. And, you know, it reminds me of that old joke, right? Where wife complains to the husband saying, "You never tell me you love me anymore." And the husband looks at her sort of surprised and says, "What? I told you when we got married that I loved you. If anything changes, I'll let you know." And I think that it's something that we're all guilty of, is that we hear something from a partner and then just assume that nothing's changing, or we say something and then assume that it's not going to change. And I think we need those regular check-in points to really reflect where we're at, what has happened to change where we're at, and whether we're still on a path that makes sense to us.
So could you share a favorite memory?
You know, something happened recently that's been kind of wild. I've actually never shared this story. So as I mentioned, we went through a really tough spot financially back in sort of January, February of this year. And we've bounced back, thankfully, and it's good. And, you know, cash is flowing and clients are happy and everything's all good. Except as the founder, you know, you're always the last guy to get paid. And so I've been making sure not to take any money out of the company for a very long time now. And so, you know, it's one of those amazing things to me, how business can be going so well, and in your personal bank account, you're like, well, we have nothing. We can always pull money from the company to eat, but there's nothing there right now. And so we were looking at cars for the summer. We've got this amazing place. We moved from the cave to a new place just about a month ago. And we were thinking about cars. And the interesting part about renting cars in Spain is that in the off season, which ends about a month ago, they're extremely inexpensive. You can rent a car for less than you would for a lease payment in Toronto and insurance and everything included. But in the summer, it like quadruples. Like, you're looking at more like $2,000 to $2,500 a month for a car long-term rental for, like, you know, a basic car. And looking at it going, you know, like, yeah, I guess if we needed to, we can pull money in from the company, but I'd rather not take $10,000 out of the business to pay for a crappy car that we're not even going to own at the end of the summer. And so this is getting to a memory, I promise. So we were walking out of the cave, and we went for a walk down the road from the cave, and we were talking about this sort of situation we were in and what we were going to do and where would we find a car. And our neighbors, who we'd met once, we walked by their house, and I said sort of casually, I'm like, that's even the kind of car we need. We need a high sort of raised, a raised chassis car, because the new place is up this steep and bumpy road. I said, we need a car just like that, actually. And it's a Berlingo, which is a common sort of work truck in and around Spain. And so wild. So anyway, so we go for a walk, we walk back, and the neighbors are now out on their porch. Now, these neighbors have been around, I think, 3 times in the 8 months that we've lived there. They live in France. They spend hardly any time in Spain, but they happened to be on their porch and they happened to invite us in. I had to get back for a call, but Amy decided to go in. And, you know, 45 minutes later, she comes back to the house and she's talking and, you know, she gets to know the neighbors a little bit. And they're actually talking about how they have to drive this car back to France at the end of the summer and how they're really not looking forward to it because they don't like the long drive and yada, yada. And I said, well, I wonder if we could ask them if we could borrow the car for the summer. In exchange, we would drive it back to France for them. Being Canadian, you know, driving 5 hours is no big deal. And so Amy went back and literally about 8 minutes later, she comes back in the house. She says, we got the car. We have the car for the summer and we get to go to France at the end of the summer. And there's, I mean, as far as my time in Spain is concerned, the fact that that would just sort of materialize itself in the conversation that we were having was quite something. So it's probably one of my favorite memories of being here was, you know, good things happen when you sort of are talking and thinking about these things. And taking the proactive step of actually asking as opposed to just waiting for someone to give us the car. You know, they did give us the car. We've got a free car for the summer, but we just asked, right? And made it a win-win situation. They were thrilled to have somebody to drive this car back and we got a free car for the summer. So that's been, it's been kind of fun, that part of the story.
That's a great memory and a great lesson. You know, you have to ask. If you don't ask, then you don't get. So is there any parts of your dream that haven't quite worked out yet?
You know, kids are on the horizon, Joe. So that's something that we don't have yet that I think is part of the plan. I think, you know, there's what I've really come to appreciate since getting here is that you can be happy with this stage of the dream and still be pursuing the next stage. You know, I really look forward to the day where I can take my leadership team and, you know, rent a place in Greece for a week and fly everybody there to stay there and to, you know, go through a leadership planning session. And then the next year do the same thing in you know, Buenos Aires or something. And we're not quite at that stage yet. I think that'll be cool when we can sort of do the jet setting thing for everybody on the team and not just me and my life. And, you know, there's lots of business objectives, things that I want to continue to do with Actionable. But I'm pretty happy with what we've created so far.
So what do your dreams for the future look like then?
Global domination, Joe. Global domination. No, we've got, what are we doing? We're expanding our, we have a consultant program, the Actionable Consultant Program that is really starting to gain traction. And I'm excited to spread that around the globe. I'm heading down to Australia in August to get things launched in Melbourne, which is great. And looking forward to spending more time down there. You know, again, on the business front, we've got language. So we're adding Spanish, ironically, and French and German and Dutch. And one of the things that I'm really excited about, one of my big dream pictures is I want to own retreat sort of center. I often think about Richard Branson, and I don't necessarily aspire to Richard Branson's level of success, although that would be cool. But he's got Necker Island, right? And the way Necker Island is set up is you can rent it out for an exorbitant rate if you want to bring your executive down, executive team. But he also invites people. And so he gets really cool business owners to come down in sort of a think tank model. And people love to go because A, it's Richard Branson, and B, it's this incredible island. And I would love to do something like that, where I could have a place where we could bring, you know, thought leaders or business leaders or, you know, the leadership team of a nonprofit that's doing really cool stuff and maybe can't afford to do something exorbitant like that, but we would fly them down and be able to sort of listen in on those sessions and get to know really cool people. So the idea of having a hub, a place to be for sort of, you know, our type of business leaders and really have criteria around the type of people that we want to have there, that's really cool to me. So that's in the future as well.
Those sound like great dreams. let me know Thanks, when man. You got your own island and I'll come fly out there.
Absolutely, man.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
I think to me, the idea of living your dreams and the people that I know who are truly living their dreams are people that are curious, that have a great level of humility, people that are trying new things without the fear of falling down. They fall down all the time and they, you know, pick themselves back up, learn from the experience and move on. And are just, you know, taking that proactive step. I think it's that whole idea that no one's going to hand it to you. I mean, you need to make those proactive steps. And the other big thing that I've learned is that those, like, you know, overnight successes or those breakthrough moments happen after 10 years of hard work. You know, like it's a gradual increase until you reach a tipping point. It's not nothing. And then all of a sudden you're on Oprah, right? It's that I'm dating myself with that, but it's a gradual climb and we need to embrace that climb and not be frustrated with the fact that, you know, that guy did it faster or, you know, look at WhatsApp being sold for $16 billion. My company's been around for 5 years. Why am I not worth $16 billion? You know, we're all running our own race. And as long as you're enjoying what you're doing along the way, you know, the financial success and that stuff will come. I'm not I'm not against that, but it's, you got to enjoy the process. You can't just, in my opinion, you know, if you're just pursuing the end goal, then you're missing out on a whole lot of fun along the way.
Well, I would love to have you plug all your websites.
What do we got? All right. So there's actionablebooks.com. That's our main hub, and free business book summaries, free author interviews. We've got a couple paid programs for consultants and also for team leaders. Then we have Publishizer, which is publishizer.com, is where the book is available for pre-sale, Beyond the Picket Fence. And I guess if people want to get a hold of me, Joe, probably the best bet is my Twitter handle, which is @actionablechris. And yeah, love to hear from you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Chris. I'd love to have you on the show again in 6 months to a year, and we'll follow up on how you've been.
Sounds great, man. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me, Joe.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter @DreamersPodcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/DreamersPodcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.